Hey, everybody.
Hello.
Happy midweek. Tuesday is when we're recording this episode. Coming to you with another episode of Connecting with the Creator. Still in Genesis, we decided to skip one chapter. Don't throw too much guilt and shame on us. It has to do with all the lineages and hard to pronounce names. So we decided we might just go shoot right over to 37. In case any of you haven't listened to the previous episodes, we've been talking about Jacob, Esau, that story, Jacob leaving the land, getting married, having kids, dealing with his future wife's father, Laban, treating him somewhat harshly, and how he's done his work and not paying him what he told him what he would, who was also his mother's brother, I believe, so it was considered his uncle. So that's why he left the land, because there wasn't a suitable wife for him. And so now we're kind of catching up to where he's met up with Esau, and that's where kind of we'll start the story off right here.
Alrighty.
Chapter 37.
Genesis 37, here we go. Jacob lived in the land where his father had stayed, the land of Canaan. This is the account of Jacob's family line. Joseph, a young man of 17, was tending the flocks with his brothers, the son of Bilhah and the son of Zilpah, his father's wives, and he brought their father a bad report about them. Now Israel loved Joseph more than any of his other sons, because he had been born to him in his old age, and he made an ornate robe for him. When his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, they hated him and could not speak a kind word of him. Joseph had a dream, and when he told it to his brothers, they hated him all the more. He said to them, "Listen to this dream I had. We were binding sheaves of grain out in the field, when suddenly my sheaf rose and stood upright, while your sheaves gathered around mine and bowed down to it." His brothers said to him, "Do you intend to reign over us? Will you actually rule us?" And they hated him all the more because of his dream and what he had said. Then he had another dream, and he told it to his brothers. "Listen," he said, "I had another dream, and this time the sun and moon and 11 stars were bowing down to me." When he told his father as well as his brothers, his father rebuked him and said, "What is this dream you had? Will your mother and I and your brothers actually come and bow down to the ground before you?" His brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the matter in mind. Now his brothers had gone to graze their father's flocks near Shechem, and Israel told to Joseph, "As you know, your brothers are grazing the flocks near Shechem. Come, I am going to send you to them." "Very well," he replied. So he said to them, "Go and see if all is well with your brothers and with the flocks, and bring word back to me." Then he sent him off from the valley of Hebron. When Joseph arrived at Shechem, a man found him wandering around in the fields and asked him, "What are you looking for?" He replied, "I'm looking for my brothers. Can you tell me where they are grazing their flocks?" "They moved on from here," the man answered. "I heard them say, 'Let's go to Dothan.'" So Joseph went after his brothers and found them near Dothan. But they saw him in the distance, and before he reached them, they plotted to kill him. "Here comes that dreamer," they said to each other. "Come now, let's kill him and throw him into one of these cisterns and say that a ferocious animal devoured him. Then we'll see what comes of his dreams." When Reuben heard this, he tried to rescue him from their hands. "Let's not take his life," he said. "Don't shed any blood. Throw him into this cistern here in the wilderness, but don't lay a hand on him." Reuben said this to rescue him from them and take him back to his father. So when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped him of his robe, the ornate robe he was wearing, and they took him and threw him into the cistern. The cistern was empty. There was no water in it. As they sat down to eat their meal, they looked up and saw a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead. Their camels were loaded with spices, balm, and myrrh, and they were on their way to take them down to Egypt. Judah said to his brothers, "What will we gain if we kill our brother and cover up his blood? Come, let's sell him to the Ishmaelites and not lay our hands on him. After all, he is our brother, our own flesh and blood." His brothers agreed. So when the Midianite merchants came by, his brothers pulled Joseph out of the cistern and sold him for 20 shekels of silver to the Ishmaelites, who took him to Egypt. When Reuben returned to the cistern and saw that Joseph was not there, he tore his clothes. He went back to his brothers and said, "The boy isn't there. Where can I turn now?" Then they got Joseph's robe, slaughtered a goat, and dipped the robe in the blood. They took the ornate robe back to their father and said, "We found this. Examine it to see whether it is your son's robe." He recognized it and said, "It is my son's robe. Some ferocious animal has devoured him. Joseph has surely been torn to pieces." Then Jacob tore his clothes, put on sackcloth, and mourned for his son many days. All his sons and daughters came to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted. "No," he said, "I will continue to mourn until I join my son in the grave." So his father wept for him. Meanwhile, the Midianites sold Joseph in Egypt to Potiphar, one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard.
There's a lot going on in this very small chapter. There's a lot of things that just happen there. You know, this is Joseph being 17 years old. And obviously, in that time, it was a normal, essentially, job to be a shepherd. And that's what they were all out doing, tending to their flocks. One is for him to have such a dream. Like, do you have vivid dreams?
I can remember them sometimes, but not normally.
Okay. So if I were to wake up each morning and, like, I didn't just get my day started and I sat there and I wrote down my dreams, like, I have vivid dreams every single day. The thing is that my vivid dreams are very... they're usually based on an experience that I've had or I've done something. They're not me, like, the sun and the moon bowing down to me or a sheaf rising up or anything like that. It's in relation to something I've done. Actually, it's interesting. Last night I woke up at like 3:30 in the morning from a very vivid dream, and I was golfing, and somebody was riding on the back of the golf cart, and in my mind, I have old golf clubs, and so the person driving made a weird turn, and the person in the back had their hands on my clubs and ripped and, like, broke my clubs and ripped them off. And they went up to, like, show me, and it, like, the graphite stuck in my hand. And then, like, it ripped, like, a piece of my skin off to where it was, like, a whole chunk of my finger missing. And I woke up, like, I was just like, holy cow. And I, like, it was almost like a piece of asparagus, you know, like, like, bit into it. Like, that's what the dream was looking at. And I was like, I still, like, had felt it. And it was a hard time going back to sleep, but it was a nightmare of an experience that I had previously had, and not something just so maybe metaphysical, mystical, to where, and I wonder, like, why is that? Is that because we're so far tuned from just all of these things that are going out there and all the opportunities, or because it's, our minds are so absolutely busy with so many options and so many things to where maybe the creativity isn't there, or it's just like, I don't know. Because dreams are a huge thing, especially as we go back in the Old Testament.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like a lot of it is because, I mean, like, one of the things you said is people are so busy all the time. So there's never a lack of things to think about. So maybe that's why. Or I feel like a lot of people don't necessarily remember their dreams all the time. So, I mean, that could be another reason. Or, I don't know. Just back then, I feel like imagery and stories meant a lot more. Whereas if you saw the sun and the moon bowing down to you, like, what does that even mean or look like? Or would you even think anything of it? Or would you just say, oh, the sun's setting and the moon's rising or whatnot? Or, I don't know. Just, there's a lot of imagery, I feel like, involved.
Yeah, that's a good point. The bowing down, the setting and the rising. And so why is it specifically of him?
Right.
That's an interesting point. Never really thought about that. But then again, like, as his brother saying those things out to them, it's just like, I don't know what you would expect to receive from your brothers if I were to say to you guys, oh, yeah, like, so what's going to happen is that I'm going to live down in Miami and you guys are all going to end up being my servants, like, and you're going to help take care of my house and stuff like it wouldn't go over very well. And so I was like, why can't you just keep these things to yourself? And why do you feel the need to express these things? Which in the end, I think that it ended up being the will of God that those happened in the way that they did to create this. But he's not doing himself any favors.
No.
You know, it'd be like if you went to high school and you just like were super arrogant and prideful and just tell it like you're not going to make many friends with that approach.
Yeah, it makes him come off as like an egomaniac, kind of just everything will bow down to me. You all, this is the Lord has spoken to me. Not necessarily what he's saying, but basically it's just, I don't know.
And I think inside this story, we also get a glimpse of split families and what that looks like and what it does, to where you have one father and another mother and another mother. And so, I mean, essentially there's four different mothers, right? There's Rachel, Leah, Bilhah, and the other
Zilpah,
yeah, who, you know, they all have their own children. So, you know, if you only have one father and he's, and then they have all their mothers. So I would have to assume that based on how their mothers spoke to them, like Rachel's or Rebecca speaking to Jacob when he was leaving Esau, like she had a close relationship with him. So she was speaking with him about that. And I would have to assume each one of these mothers were talking to them and possibly poorly about the other sister with these were actually sisters. Like these were blood sisters who were wives, you know, to one person and then their maidservants. But each one of them, obviously, I think wanted the blessing for their children, for their sons. And I think it just shows like what split households do and the tension, the pride, the arrogance that is even built up. And because this reminds me more of like high school, like where you have your specific sects and groups of high school to where they're not friendly with each other. They don't like each other. And that's what this is relating to. And not so much you would think like our family, like that would be really terrible if we got to that point where, you know, we were treating each other in this way.
And it's just, and kind then of, it's kind of like a throwback to Jacob and Esau, just the sheer jealousy, and even Cain and Abel, just the jealousy that comes from all the brothers' relationships, and you see how far it goes every time.
Yeah, and I think that's what's so foreign to me is that these are brothers. Like, these are brothers. Like, I have a hard time grasping how brothers could act like that. Is it, like, all based on the inheritance? Like, what? I guess back then you had really nothing else. There was no car. There was no house. There was nothing to really try to prove your worth or to work towards, but it was your inheritance. And that was really it. So that was life. And that was it. So I guess that's what creates all this jealousy and frustration. But then they go to such a point to where they're selling their brother. They're making it look like he was murdered. And it's just, like, what extent? Wow! It's sad to see that they weren't able to just, you know, brush this type of a thing off and like let it go on.
Yeah, except for the one time that Reuben spoke up and basically tried to talk them out of killing him and just say, oh, just throw him into the cistern or. But other than that, it's just kind of straight violence driven.
Right, which if I think we look back, I don't think Reuben is actually he has the same mother and same father. I think Benjamin and Joseph are the only two that have the same mother and father.
Oh, okay.
If I'm not mistaken with that. But yeah, anyways. All right, anything else you want to say about 37?
Nope.
All right. I'll carry on to 38. It was at this time that Yehuda went off from his brothers and settled near a man named Hira, who was an Adullamite. There Yehuda saw one of the daughters of a certain Kenani whose name was Shua, and he took her and slept with her. She conceived and had a son, whom he named Ur. She conceived again and had a son, and she called him Onan. Then she conceived yet again and had a son whom she called Shelah. He was in Kiziv when she gave birth to him. Yehuda took a wife for his firstborn, and her name was Tamar. But Yehuda's firstborn was evil, Adonai's perspective. So Adonai killed him. Yehuda said to Onan, "Go and sleep with your brother's wife." Perform the duty of a husband's brother to her and preserve your brother's line of descent. However, Onan knew that the child would not count as his, so whenever he had intercourse with his brother's wife, he spilled the semen on the ground so as not to give his brother offspring. What he did was evil from Adonai's perspective, so he killed him too. Then Yehuda said to Tamar, his daughter-in-law, "Stay widow in your father's house until my son Shelah grows up," for he thought, "I don't want him to die too, like his brothers." So Tamar went and lived at the house, at the home with her father. In due time, Shua's daughter, the wife of Yehuda, died. After Yehuda had been comforted, he went up to be with his sheep shearers in Timnah, he and his friend Hira the Adullamite. Tamar was told, "Your father-in-law has gone up to Timnah to shear his sheep." So she took off a widow's clothes, completely covered her face with her veil, and sat at the entrance to Enayim, which is on the way to Timnah. For she saw that Shelah had grown up, but she still was not being given to him as wife. When Yehuda saw her, he thought she was a prostitute because she'd covered her face. So he went over to her where she was sitting and said, not realizing that she was his daughter-in-law, "Come, let me sleep with you." She answered, "What will you pay to sleep with me?" He said, "I will send you a kid from the flock of goats." She said, "Will you also give me something as a guarantee until you send it?" He answered, "What shall I give you as a guarantee?" She said, "Your seal with its cord and the staff you're carrying in your hand." So he gave them to her, then went and slept with her, and she conceived by him. She got up and went away, took off her veil, and put on her widow's clothes. Yehuda sent the kid with his friend, the Adullamai, to receive the guarantee items back from the woman, but he couldn't find her. He asked the people near him, near where she had been, "Where's the prostitute who was on the road to Enayim?" But they answered, "There hasn't been any prostitute here." So he returned to Yehuda and said, "I couldn't find her. Also, the people there said, there hasn't been any prostitute here." Yehuda said, "All right, let her keep the things so that we won't be publicly shamed. I sent the kid, but you didn't find her." About 3 months later, Yehuda was told, "Tamar, your daughter-in-law, has been acting like a whore. Moreover, she is pregnant as a result of her prostitution." Yehuda said, "Bring her out and let her be burned alive." When she was brought out, she sent this message to her father-in-law. "I am pregnant by the man to whom these things belong. Determine, I beg you, whose they are, the signet, the cord, and the staff." Then Yehuda acknowledged owning them. He said, "She is more righteous than I, because I didn't let her become the wife of my son Shelah, and never slept with her again." When she went into labor, it became evident that she was going to have twins. As she was in labor, one of them put his hand, and the midwife took his hand and tied a scarlet thread on it, saying, "This one came out first." But then he withdrew his hand, and his brother came out. So she said, "How did you manage to break out first?" Therefore, he was named Peretz, breaking out. Then out came his brother with a scarlet thread on his hand, and he was given the name Zerach, scarlet. Anything with that?
I mean, just the ignorance, and so he sleeps with this prostitute, and somebody says that his daughter-in-law or Tamar has basically been sleeping, and now she's pregnant, and she wasn't supposed to be. So then he's very immediate to judge. But then once he realizes that it was her who he thought was the prostitute that he was sleeping with, well, that he was sleeping with, but that he thought was a prostitute, that he realizes like the mistake that he made. And it's just, how quick to judge without, I guess, hearing the story or hearing anything.
Yeah, it's essentially, like you said, just about being a hypocrite. Like, it's not okay for her to sleep around, mm-hmm. but it's okay for him to sleep around. And that's something that I've really had an issue with in society today, where they look at women who have maybe high body counts, and that is, like, absolutely terrible, and it's disgusting. But it's acceptable for men to have those exact same high body counts or higher body counts, and it's, like, it's not looked down as much as the women. And it's just like they're both exactly mm-hmm. the same. like that intimacy, what it does to your mind, what it does to your future spouse, if you ever want to have a spouse, if you want to ever have any type of a deep relationship, it's still deteriorating your mind in the exact same way, no matter if you're male or female. Yeah, there sure are different emotional connections with women and physical connections that men have. Men have, I think, a deeper physical connection based on the sight and that. But it's like, if you're seeing all of these different things and you've seen them all, well, what's this going to compare to when you have a special person? How do you get all these things out of your mind? How do you clear those things? You know, whether it goes to OnlyFans or whatever it is, it's just like, we're really like, we're not setting ourselves up for success. Mm-hmm. If our focus in the future is to like live a purposeful life and be close to the Creator in terms of being able to love a significant other in the future. It's just,
yeah, it just kind of, it's just kind of taking away, it's trading current pleasure for future pleasure and happiness, and just accepting yourself in the future, I guess. It's just taking away from your future self to give temporary pleasure to your current self, I guess.
Right. It's all about self-discipline, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's just, self-discipline can be really, really hard, but the rewards can be very, very satisfying mm-hmm. from it. And they can be really, I don't know, really, really, really enjoyable. Mm-hmm. Like everything that I've been extremely disciplined on, and then I've received results from those things, have just been very, very rewarding as I sit back and I look and how proud I am of myself mm-hmm. for maybe going, you know, being super strict on a diet or going to the gym or reading or you know, whatever it is, like really, it's really enjoyable to realize how hard I worked and mm-hmm. to see all the hard work that was put in and what it created in terms of the reward.
Right. I agree.
But yeah, in terms of this, it's just like, this is the issue I have is like, this is what was written about the chosen people group. Mm-hmm. And this is the type of nonsense that they're doing. And so in a religious setting, like, you know, there's a lot of people who we all sin, right? Mm-hmm. So it's our ability to ask for forgiveness and be forgiven. But it's just like, it's eye opening when this is who, like, the stories are getting written about, and mm-hmm. it's just like some of the things that they're doing. So I think in one way, it's just like, wow, like these people really were kind of messed up too, but it's also the recognition that, wow, we're messed up and we have a lot of things that we can do better in. Right. So it's very applicable to our own lives. And maybe if it was all people who were perfect, it would be difficult to try to relate
and
try to maybe have that belief.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of the time it's like, it's written back in a time where everyone's a shepherd and everybody has animals and, I don't know, people are stealing flocks of whatever, or they're stealing herds of animals, and it's like, oh, that's not relatable because I don't own any sheep or I don't own any goats or whatever. But it's like, the whole idea of stealing is still stealing. The whole idea of adultery is still adultery. It doesn't change much in that front, but it's just, I feel like that's where the disconnect comes.
Yeah, and I think if we go back to the Levin's story, it's taking advantage of. And it's like the extent that they were taking advantage of then related to sheep. Today, it relates to dollars, time, energy. So if you're still taking advantage of people in just in a different form of like trying to get them to do something for cheaper, or you know, like making them do more things to waste more energy because you don't want to do something, it's still that idea of taking advantage of somebody mm-hmm. and essentially putting yourself above someone else, mm-hmm. believing that you're better than them, right. All right.
Alrighty.
Ready? I hit 39. Okay.
Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt. Potiphar, an Egyptian who was one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard, brought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him there. The Lord was with Joseph so that he prospered, and he lived in the house of his Egyptian master. When his master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord gave him success in everything he did, Joseph found favor in his eyes and became his attendant. Potiphar put him in charge of his household, and he entrusted to his care everything he owned. From the time he put him in charge of his household and of all that he owned, the Lord blessed the household of the Egyptian because of Joseph. The blessing of the Lord was on everything Potiphar had, both in the house and in the field. So Potiphar left everything he had in Joseph's care. With Joseph in charge, he did not concern himself with anything except the food he ate. Now Joseph was well-built and handsome, and after a while his master's wife took notice of Joseph and said, "Come to bed with me." But he refused. "With me in charge," he told her, "my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owns he has entrusted to my care. No one is greater in this house than I am. My master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God?" And though she spoke to Joseph day after day, he refused to go to bed with her or even be with her. One day he went into the house to attend to his duties, and none of the household servants were inside. She caught him by his cloak and said, "Come to bed with me." But he left his cloak in her hand and ran out of the house. When she saw that he had left his cloak in her hand and he had run out of the house, she called to her household servants. "Look," she said to him, "this Hebrew has been brought to us to make sport of us. He came in here to sleep with me, but I screamed. When he heard me scream for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house." She kept his cloak beside her until his master came home. Then she told him this story: "That Hebrew slave you brought us came to me to make sport of me. But as soon as I screamed for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house." When his master heard the story, his wife told him, saying, "This is how your slave treated me." He burned with anger. Joseph's master took him and put him in prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. But while Joseph was there in the prison, the Lord was with him. He showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden. So the warden put Joseph in charge of all those held in the prison, and he was made responsible for all that was done there. The warden paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care, because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in whatever he did.
I mean, in terms of thinking, Potiphar realizing how much God had been with Joseph and everything that he had brought him and anointed him and, you know, increased his own possessions. Like, this is the master's possessions, right? They're all getting increased. And this guy believes his wife, like, he believes her story. And so it blows my mind, first off, that she would, like, try to do that time and time again. And then she's so frustrated that somebody says no, that it's like, okay, so now I'm going to make up this story, so now he's just no longer here. Like, right. Was he just too tempting? He was too handsome? It was just like it was just it was just too much for her to, like, have to deal with every single day. So it's like, okay, right. Now I gotta get him out of here. Like, I gotta get him off my mind. Wow, dude.
And just the fact that, obviously, when someone is that way, it's not too much of a secret. Like, other things in that relationship must have been telling things elsewhere. Like, it's not just, I can't imagine Joseph was the only one where it's like Joseph was just this stunning 12 out of 10 guy. And it's like, I mean, obviously there had to have been other encounters too, but just the fact that he took her word for it without even bringing it up to Joseph or having a conversation with him, and then just throwing him straight into prison was kind of just after everything that Joseph had done for him and their relationship, and just throwing him straight into prison.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, she shot her shot and it didn't work, and like, Yeah, I don't know. Maybe he was Tom Brady. I don't know. Maybe. Like, you know what I mean? Like, if you think about it, like, you put him in that position, like, okay, yeah, he's probably that 12-10 to where, it's like, okay, I want this man.
Right. Right. Yeah, it makes sense.
But,
yeah.
I guess maybe that's something me and you have never had to deal with, so we don't understand.
I guess not. Yeah. And it just kind of, reading through it, I guess I never really realized how much it just reminded me of the story of Adam and Eve and just that temptation. Just, I don't know, just that first temptation arising and then Joseph's ability to turn it down over and over and over again.
Well, I think it has to do with, maybe it's not a temptation, because temptations are usually based on your desires, right? Mm. And so if he actually has a pure heart, and his desire is to, you know, seek the Father, it's, you know, he had these wild dreams and all these stories that he was sharing. And maybe a lot of that's because his desires were very, very pure. He had very, very pure intentions. And, you know, I think that's the... That's the inner struggle that we all deal with now, is that what is a desire and what is my heart? Like, I think the further and farther we get deep diving more into society instead of drawing away and trying to be closer to God, that we have a bigger misunderstanding of what is what, and we kind of start putting the little blinders over, and then it's like, this isn't really that important. It's not as important as I used to think it was. Or, yeah, that doesn't, yeah, it's all right. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, gluttony or lying or stealing. It's like, maybe. Like, yeah, I'm not stealing my neighbor's chair, but stealing music on Napster. Like, well, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
That's way before your time, though, dude. I don't know if you heard about Napster, but essentially it was music where they would burn CDs. And, Spotify, which is essentially you can pay for and be able to have access to every single song that was ever made, instead of having to buy all those CDs and stuff.
Yeah.
It's just the degree and depth of our desires and how the world changes as we progress, right? So the levels of difference between right and wrong always stay the same. Mm-hmm. It's just the differentiation of how technology changes as to what they are and what they look like. Right and wrong is still right and wrong. Right. It just looks different back then to where it does today.
Right. That makes sense.
All right. Let's go along to chapter 40. Mm-hmm. Sometime later, it came about that the Egyptian king's cupbearer and baker gave offense to their lord, the king of Egypt. Pharaoh became angry with his two officers, the chief cupbearer and the chief baker. So he put them in custody in the house of the captain of the guard, in the prison, in the same place where Joseph was kept. The captain of the guard charged Joseph to be with them, and he became their attendant while they remained in prison. One night, the two of them, the king of Egypt's cupbearer and his baker, there in prison, both had dreams, each dream with its own meaning. Joseph came into them in the morning and saw that they looked sad. He asked Pharaoh's officers, there with him in the prison of his master's house, "Why are you looking so sad today?" They said to him, "We each had a dream, and there's no one around who can interpret it." Joseph said to them, "Don't interpretations belong to God? Tell it to me, please." Then the chief cupbearer told Joseph his dream, "And my dream, there in front of me was a vine, and the vine had three branches. The branches budded, then suddenly began to blossom, and finally clusters of ripe grapes appeared. Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, so I took the grapes and pressed them into Pharaoh's cup, and gave the cup to Pharaoh." Joseph said to him, "Here is its interpretation. The three branches are 3 days. Within 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to your office, but you will be giving Pharaoh his cup, as you used to when you were his cupbearer. But remember me when it goes well with you, and show me kindness, please, and mention me to Pharaoh, so that you will release me from this prison. For the truth is that I was kidnapped from the land of the Hebrews, and here too I have done nothing wrong that would justify putting me in this dungeon." When the chief Baker saw that the interpretation was favorable. He said to Yosef, I too saw in my dream. There were three baskets of white bread on my head. In the uppermost basket, there were all kinds of baked goods for Pharaoh, but the birds ate them out of the basket on my head. Yosef answered, here is its interpretation. The three baskets are 3 days. Within 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head from off of you. He will hang you on a tree, and the birds will eat your flesh off you. Mafter, on the third day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, he gave a party for all his officials, and he lifted up the head of the chief cupbearer and the head of the chief baker among his officials. He restored the chief cupbearer back to his position so that he again gave Pharaoh his cup. But he hanged the chief baker as Yosef had interpreted to them. Nevertheless, the chief cupbearer didn't remember Yosef, but forgot him. It never really says what their offense was to the king of Egypt that got them in the trouble in the first place, which is interesting. It's right. Just like, was there different levels of wrongdoing that they each did, or was it the same thing? I wish it would allude to that story, but it doesn't.
Right.
I also think it's just like, oh, like, you know, you hear a great story, it's like, oh wow, okay. It's like, well, I'm gonna share it. And then you just like listen, like, could you just imagine, like,
yeah.
Like, you're just a baker, you're just like that anxiety and depression would just be to like an extreme. Like, wouldn't you just be like banging on the walls trying to escape? Like, how are you still just like, oh yeah, let me just go to sleep now?
Yeah.
Like, I'd be doing anything I possibly could to get out of there.
Right.
You know, and then on his birthday, he's like, he restores one and he doesn't the other. It's just, yeah.
Yeah, especially if the two different crimes are, the cupbearer was something very minor and probably shouldn't have been put in prison in the first place, whereas the baker could have committed like an atrocity or something. And it's like, okay, well, yeah, it's reasonable that he killed this guy and reinstated the other guy, but it doesn't say, so it's just kind of left to imagination.
Right. And what's interesting is that each one of these guys had individual dreams. And so Yosef makes a statement, don't interpretations belong to God? And it just seems as though like everybody has dreams, but the more I talk to people, a lot of people don't really seem to dream. And that's something that's always been somewhat interesting to me.
I think studies show that everybody dreams, but it's just the fact that people don't remember their dreams. Because, I mean, there are things that you can do to remember your dreams more frequently and to even lucid dream or things like that. But I never used to remember any of my dreams, but if you talk about them right when you wake up or if you write them down, you'll start remembering them more and more and realize that dreaming happens to everybody, but it's just not everybody remembers it.
So they're not really aware of it.
Right.
Yep. Yeah, it's interesting. Dreams are a very fascinating thing.
Yeah.
And I would like to actually do more studying into that. I would like to really try to understand dreams at one point, because it's like, you're not 100% aware physically, but mentally, do you actually have 100% control over all of these dreams? Are you actually being able to create these?
Right.
Like, how does that happen? Because, you know, based on these things, it doesn't seem like Joseph would just go and create these dreams that make him look
right
as a significant person, and then like, and then come true just to be, oh, okay, yeah, I'm gonna have a dream about wanting to be king. Right. So that I could be essentially king. Right. But again, the mind does work in very positive ways like that, right? Mm-hmm. So our minds, when we create something and the more we focus on something, oftentimes the more we're able to actually follow through with whatever it is that we're focusing on, and the things that we tell ourselves, whether negative or whether positive, most of the time affect us in those ways. Or they do affect us, right? Like, so it's like, whether you think you can or you can't, you're right.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Like, if you think you can do something, you'll be able to accomplish it. If you think you can't, you're right. You won't be able to, because you won't try, and you can't. You can't. Mm-hmm. If you don't think you can, you can't.
Yeah. The whole, even if it's just a thought in your head, if you keep telling yourself it over and over, it's going to ring true about you, regardless of if it may not have been true at one point. It's just that idea of just it putting itself into your head and on repeat over and over, it will come true eventually.
Yeah. I've been thinking a lot about, like, you know, I think anytime the new year comes, it's like thinking about goals and like what I want to accomplish. And a couple of weeks ago, I had this just grand idea. It's like, you know, I'm 40 years old. I feel the best that I've ever felt. It's like, wouldn't it be cool to just like dunk a basketball? Like, I've never been able to really dunk a basketball on a 10-foot rim. And I was like, man, that would be really awesome. And then I just started thinking about, it's probably not that I can't do it, but it's the amount of effort that I would have to put in to being able to do that would be so intense and extraordinary to what I've been doing like the last 3 or 4 years. It's like, do I want to do that? And if I do, for what? I mean, it would be really cool to just have an accomplishment like that, to be able to be like, wow, like, I actually accomplished that. And then I was also thinking, I was like, okay, well, what about this? What if I was able to hit a home run at a Major League Baseball stadium with a wood bat? Mm-hmm. Okay. For me, that would be a lot more attainable to be able to do without absolutely having to change my diet. Because for me, I think about it as like, okay, I'm going to have to probably lose a lot of weight, because the skinnier I am, the easier it's going to be able to jump. And then I'm just going to have to work on my calves. It's like, do I really want to just be another little string bean when I've been working pretty much my whole life, like trying to put muscle on and size? Being able to do that and feeling the way that I feel? Not really. So then I was, there's somebody who's essentially a strength and conditioning coach that lives here. And I was talking to them, you know, like, would it be possible for me to just keep being built and try to be more like a linebacker? Because some linebackers can still jump really high. And they're talking about, like, they're just really athletically talented, though, Chad. And if you start looking at those linebackers, like, they're really, really strong. So the amount of weight that you're going to have to push at 40 years old to be able to reach that type of vertical, you're going to have to really go after it really, really hard. So it's just like, okay, yeah, like, I could probably do it, but I don't want to put forth that much effort.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot that goes into it. It's the, sure, you would be able to say that you can, but is it worth it to give up on what you've been working on and dedicate yourself strictly to this one goal that you may or may not even really want all that much, just to have the ability to say you can? Because at the end of the day, you can dunk a basketball. So what? Do you even play basketball? Do you like to play basketball that much? Is it, are you going to use the ability to dunk in your life other than just saying you can? So it's just, I don't know, just the dedication of time and commitment and cutting off everything else that would take up that time.
No, in the back of my mind, I've always wanted to just be this perfect athlete in every single sport, to where I saw it, I was like, okay, I would still like to bowl a 300 game in bowling. Yeah. I would like to have a hole in one. Yeah. I would like to be able to dunk a basketball, and I would like to be able to hit a baseball. The goal was to be able to hit a baseball out of a Major League Baseball stadium with a wood bat instead of just over the fence.
Yeah.
Like, in my mind, I'd be like, at 40 years old, could you imagine, like, that, like, how, what that would do for Instagram reels, and like how people would like just like look at you and be like, oh, it's just, yeah. Huh. Like these great stories that I just could think up in my mind. And I think that's one thing that's amazing about the mind, how especially my imagination, dude, it can go wild. And I can think like just so many like amazing things about, like, oh, that would be so sweet. Like, I love to like, not just sleep and dream, but dream. Like, yeah. just think about the amazing possibilities of what could possibly happen that's so far out there and so unattainable. But it was like, yeah, but what if we could actually do that?
Yeah. 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 I guess I don't go that far when I try to set my goals. And I guess I haven't thought about dunking since probably high school. And I just kind of accepted the fact that it's not really a goal of mine anymore.
Yeah. Well, dude, like when I was down here, this has changed probably in the last 3 to 4 years. Mm-hmm. But at one point when I was down here, my goals, I was like, I wanted to be a billionaire. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't want to be a millionaire. Yeah. Like, I wanted to be a billionaire. Like, I wanted to have a helicopter, a private jet. I had like house in Miami. I wanted one in California, Hawaii, New York, and then again somewhere like in the Midwest. Mm-hmm. And they were going to be like 8,000 square foot homes. I wanted to be able to like fly my family around. And it was just and it was just like so overwhelming of like a goal. And it mm-hmm. would, you know, it, the farther, the longer I live and the more I start thinking about it, I was like, for what? Like, mm-hmm. yeah, it would be really cool to obtain and to push your body and your mind to the limits to where you're able to do that. But it's like, what really brings Chad peace mm-hmm. and happiness and joy? And at some point I was able to start seeing those things. It's like, woof, woof. Like, I was a lot to put up with during those times, dude. Like,
yeah, I'm
you already think that I, you know, like I get obsessive and very perfectionist mindset. It was mm-hmm. like, yeah, it was even worse. Like during that time.
To the max, huh?
Yeah.
Huh. Anything else that you would want to add on to this episode before we wrap it up?
We'll see. No, I think that by like, you know, just finishing off the episode, the main takeaways are, you know, there's still right and wrong. It's just that the differences have changed. And I think as we read through Jacob and now Joseph, is that having a pure heart is really important. And I think sometimes we don't realize how pure people's hearts are until we've been left with them for a long time. And so, you know, when you build friendships or you're around people at work for a long time, you know, sometimes their actions really start speaking louder than words, and you don't really realize that until further down the road. And I think oftentimes also, you know, when you start realizing like things have changed, like this is a lot less stressful of a job, or like Pharaoh, it's just like, well, what were the blessings that this guy was having? Where it's just like, okay, ever since Joseph's been here, has it been more refreshing? Like there, you've had an increase in flock. Well, is that because you've had less people coming to steal them? Is it because they haven't been dying? Is it because what are all these reasons? And like, you have to imagine in my mind that life has been much less stressful with all these things. It's like, how do you not see this amount of peace that just comes into your life and this like cover or maybe this amount of stress that just gets taken away? And it's just like you got to sit down and realize like when people come into your life that have that impact, like it's really, really special. And to not and to be really careful about making sure that, they're welcome and they're appreciated, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And I think the sense of being true to yourself and having a pure heart, really, even though it can be taken advantage of at times, I think at the end of the day, it rings true and they end up being blessed. I think that's going to be something that we see time and time again through this series when we read through stories like this, stories like Job, and just a bunch of different examples of just, sure, you may be going through a difficult time, but it's how you navigate that and stay true, stay fearful of God, and stay strong in your faith. And at the end of the day, it will eventually come into your blessing, but it's very hard to see in the immediate view.
Yes. And that point you just made is really, really important. Having a pure heart and staying true to yourself. Something's very, very hard to do, because oftentimes it can be very, very hard to stay true to ourselves if we want to have a pure heart and we are set on trying to love others without offending them and just trying to be absolutely everything for them. Because even though we're trying our best, sometimes we can't comprehend what it is that they need. And sometimes we're putting off of ourselves. We're not loving ourselves properly because we care so much about that individual person or whatever it is. And we don't bring up the things in life that are maybe hurting us, or we don't set our own boundaries, or we don't tell them our expectations and things. And so while it seems like we're loving others, is that we're not staying true to ourselves. And the less we stay true to ourselves, but the more we give love to others, the more difficult our life becomes. And in the same way, the more we stay true to ourselves and we become arrogant to ourselves, and the less we love others, the more they feel just inferior and demoralized. Mm-hmm. And so there's a really, really thin line of what that balance looks like, mm-hmm. and how you do both. Is that how you see other people, you love them the best that you know how, but you also stay true to yourself, you set boundaries. And so you can do both of those things very, very well, but it's not easy. And sometimes it takes proper practice, trial and error, because sometimes it will come out as anger and we're angry about it. And then other times when we start learning how to communicate better, setting those boundaries, and just saying things like, I had a phone call this weekend where I was talking to somebody and I knew that it was family VR time. And I just said, hey, like, I forgot it's VR time. Like, I really enjoy talking to you right now, but I've created this time to where we're all playing VR and it's time to go. And so it was just like, wow, I was really, really proud of myself. And before that cold call, I had created the standard of what that looked like. Hey, I can talk until 4 o'clock. And then after that, I created those boundaries from the very beginning, and it wasn't just something out of nowhere. Where previously I would just be like, oh, well, like, I don't want to say anything because I don't want to offend anybody. But it's like, no, like, I'm loving myself, but I'm also loving others because of the commitments that I made in life.
Very well said.
Yeah. Alrighty. Anything else you want to say?
No, I think that pretty much sums it up for this week.
All right. Well, we appreciate you guys taking the time to watch and listen. If anybody out there is, we hope so. Hello, 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 hello. If not, then this is something for us to go back on and appreciate, mm-hmm. and be happy of what we're trying to do with connecting with the Creator and figuring out what that life looks like and what our purpose are and purposes are and what He wants of us.
Yep.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Yep. See you guys next week.